seems like recently that much of the news we have been receiving about the health of the church in the United States, in the West in general, has been bad news.
Yeah.
And sometimes we've got to just look at things like the good, the bad, and the ugly. And so on this episode of Life Talks, we're going to be talking about the decline of the Western Church. My name is Dan. I'm with Ben. We're the teaching pastors at Life Fellowship in Charlotte, North Carolina. Ben, every time I get an email from you lately that has an article for me to read, it's like, people quit reading their Bibles during COVID. People aren't coming to church as much during COVID. More churches are closing than opening because of, you know. So do you have any good news for us?
I'm doing that because I just love to brighten up your day in your inbox.
I'm the pessimist. You're the ever-loving optimist, so it must really be bad news.
Well, I think I'm doing that because I think we feel something.
Mm-hmm.
We feel like, man, something is not right. We feel that we're heading in the wrong direction as a country. We're feeling like we're heading in a wrong direction morally. And I think if you're involved with the church, we feel the same progressive energy. The momentum is leading away from the church growth.
Yeah. I've heard it described as, you know, we're in a culture shift. If you've ever been in an earthquake zone, you know that there's the minor earthquakes, you know, the tremors.
Yeah.
And sometimes until you're well into the earthquake, you don't know whether this is going to be a 5-pointer or a 6-pointer
right.
or a 6.2. It feels like we're in the beginning stages of an earthquake, a cultural shift
yeah.
that impacts the church, Christianity, the popular culture. And we just don't know how long this is going to continue shaking and what the consequences are going to be long term.
Yeah. I mean, and the reality is, it's important for us to understand that. If you put your blinders on and just pretend, let's just keep doing church as normal, let's just keep doing whatever we've been doing, I think that you're not going to be prepared for some of these massive shifts that are happening. And so when I say that, what I'm not saying is, you know, we need to change our theology or leave the Bible behind. The Word of God and the gospel of Jesus Christ never changes, and we mm-hmm. should never, ever leave that behind.
Right.
But I do think that there are things for us to awaken and say, okay, if the gospel does have power and the Spirit of God can move in people's hearts to create a movement of God, like mm-hmm. what is going on that we are seeing the actual digression of the church as opposed to the advancement of the church?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm wrestling with right now.
And I think as we start the conversation, it's really important. I mean, you and I both come from a theological perspective. And this is something, actually, you've been very good with me in being my pastor over the years. As we're big on the sovereignty of God. So in other words, this isn't catching God by surprise.
No.
And we are confident that in the midst of this shift, God is very active. He's very much at work. He is
right.
permitting things. He's revealing things. He's purifying things. So when we talk about this, we're not really talking about it from oh my goodness, Christianity is going to end, but rather it is God is shuffling the deck, so to speak, a little bit
yeah.
and revealing some things that we need to be aware of. Let's see where God is working and why he's working in joining minute.
Yes.
So as you're sifting through this, you know, this data that's coming through and so forth, what are some trends that you think are noteworthy for us to be aware of?
Well, I think the first trend that I saw, the article, I remember one of the articles I sent to you was this article that Barna had done about how many churches are closing every year and how many churches are opening every year.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is it's the number of churches that are shutting down every year is somewhere around the number about 5,000.
Hmm.
And the number of churches that are starting every year is around 3,000. Now, those most recent statistics were pre-COVID. Hmm. So we have no idea what the disruption of COVID created for churches closing, churches starting. Because I know for a fact, before COVID, I remember there was a group of about 12 church planters that were planting in Charlotte during the beginning of 2020. And when 2020 hit, I believe there's only one or two of those churches that actually came through and planted during that out of that group of 12. So that's just personal knowledge. It's an mm-hmm. example of I guarantee you a lot of church plants that started, you know, 2019, 2020 either got delayed or shut down immediately. So those numbers that we have seen might even be worse off today than they were even 3 years ago in 2019 when this study was happening. But the reality is that's a net loss. mm-hmm. right? This is a net loss of between 1,500 and 2,000 churches every single year. And to me, when that's happening, man, that's pretty serious, because there's right around 300,000 churches in North America, and that's all denominations. I mean, it's right. like it's every church, and the median church size is something like 65 people. Mm-hmm. So it's not like it's a ton of, you know, people, but it's, man, when you lose 2,000 churches a year, every year, that's close to about 1%. It eventually is going to come to the point where we're going in the wrong direction, yeah. plain and simple.
Yeah, and you look at the net loss, realizing that some of these churches probably needed to close, and some yes. of these churches were not necessarily gospel-centric.
Yes, yes.
Because we have seen over the years a dramatic decline in the mainstream denominations.
That's correct.
And many of those have abandoned any pretense of being gospel-centric
yes.
A long time ago. But yeah, we live in a post-COVID world where the dust has not settled yet.
Yeah.
Beyond just places to go that call themselves churches, though, we're seeing things like less frequent attendance. We're seeing things like less engagement with the Bible.
Yeah.
What does that portend for our future?
Well, I just think that the church has to ask themselves, what do we need to do to go back to Jesus and say, God, you've got to rescue this church. There has to be, Dan, there has to be a level of desperation. I think you and I are old enough to remember certain movements and certain trends within the evangelical church. And the trend that I grew up in the formative years of my life, that I was kind of coming into Bible college, and I would say the first 15 years of my ministry experience, was this belief that the church was declining in North America, but what the church needed, if the church was going to recapture the energy and the vibrancy and have a movement of God again, we have got to be relevant, right?
Right.
And there's a massive relevance conversation. The idea was, listen, you try to do things in a church setting that just feel old and stale, like you're doing church in 1930, and we need to contextualize doing church generationally and culturally, and there's nothing wrong with contextualization. But I think that, I mean, we heard that drum beat forever, and we saw churches grow when they would contextualize, you know, more contemporary music, more type of teaching that was more, quote unquote, modern.
Mm-hmm. Introduction of technology.
Yeah, like all of these kinds of things that we thought, this is bringing church more in a more relevant and more modern way for people to still enjoy God, worship God, but not deal the old stodgy way of 1950s. Well, I think the lie that we believed was relevance was the key to changing, shifting. But what the relevant church did, now that we can look back on it, 30 and 40 years in the past, what we can see is what the movement of relevance did was it took people out of old stodgy churches and put them in contemporary churches, but it made no significant decrease in the lostness of America.
Mm-hmm.
So what it did was it put more people in quote unquote healthier churches, but it did not reach people and teach people how to reach their neighbors and how to live as missionary disciples where they lived. And so that to me was, you know, we're waking up and we're seeing these trends that we've done and these beliefs that we had, and hey, if you do this, you'll grow your church. But what we found is, we're looking at the data now. We have grown massive churches, but what we have not done is reach the lost. And that is that's a damning statement for the North American church. So we believed, hey, if we're relevant, then that's going to help us grow. And what it did is, it did help you grow. It helped you reach Christians who really wanted to have that kind of environment. But here's the problem we face today. 30, 40 years ago, we were dealing with a somewhat Christian worldview generation. We talked about this on our last episode with the Bible conversation. Well, the church is no longer, the Bible's no longer, when you talk about relevancy, the relevancy for millennials and Gen Zers, they're not thinking, man, I should really go back to church. Or if the church was just more relevant, I would go to it. Like, they're not even thinking about church. So I think the relevance argument, what happens when in order to be relevant, you have to compromise biblical standards on things like sexuality, mm-hmm. right? Like that's the danger of making relevance the core of your belief of what's going to help you reach people.
And in the view of many people, the church is a block to the cultural revolution that they believe that we should have.
Yeah.
Whether it is, you know, changing things like gender identity and sexual expression and
yes.
all these different things. So one of the few remaining impediments to what they would see as progress, thus the term progressive, mm-hmm. Is the church. And we've moved from a proactive stance to a reactive stance, I'm afraid, in the church. And as such, we're kind of on our heels. The interesting thing, though, for me is, you know, you look back and you know, from a global perspective, there are parts of the world where the church is growing. It is
thriving,
exploding.
Yes.
Central and South America, in parts of the Middle East where there yes. was previously no revival. In some sections of Africa, there's signs of a
yes.
spiritual awakening. And then even, you know, in China,
yeah.
in Asia, mm-hmm. and different places. Europe, it's still declining. In the West, it's declining
yes.
in terms of the North American continent. But so... Why is it expanding in other places and in ours it's a retraction?
I think that I don't think there's a simple answer to that. I do think that our socioeconomic level, it's just even Jesus talked about how the wealthier you are, the harder it is to mm-hmm. to accept him, mm-hmm. right? It's easier for a camel to go through an eye of a needle than a rich man to enter into heaven. And again, it's not saying that if people are wealthy that they can't accept Jesus. It's just when there's no desperation of, man, what are we going to eat today?
Mm-hmm.
Or how do I take care of it? You know, it feels like a lot of times in America, we do pretty well on our own without having to mm-hmm. reach out, quote unquote, to God. Now, that's not true, but it feels that way many times. And so, I think there's a lot of lies that we believe that, you know, I need God for the big things, but I don't need God for the little things. And when you don't have that desperation like people do in places where they are in a communist country or they're in a socialist country or they need God provide food for my family today, it changes what you really think you need.
Mm-hmm.
And it changes the way you cry out to God. And I think that's just a big part of it. So I think there's the wealth of the Western civilization has been in some ways a detriment. But at the same time, we could also see how it was really the Christian worldview that built the wealth.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But I do think there you see these declining values over time. And just a couple other things I'll share with you that we see. Not only do we see churches closing, here's something I found interesting. In 1992, the average age of a pastor was 44 years old in 1992. Today, 30 years later, do you know what it is?
No.
57.
Interesting.
So in
which interestingly almost matches my
I was
43 in 1992.
Yes. Yeah. So it's gone in 30 years. Yeah. The average age has gone up 23 years, which means this is a really scary statement to understand. Like, who are the new church leaders in 20 years?
Yeah.
Because if the average church age is 57, in 20 years, who's going to be leading the churches?
Yeah.
And that's a crisis that we're facing right now. And the pools that which, you know, there was this resurgence of church planting right when I did it back in 2006. Do you remember
mm-hmm.
when we planted?
Sure. Yeah.
Right around the mid 2000s to the mid 2010s. For about 10 years, there was a massive resurgence of church planting in North America. Southern Baptist, Acts 29,
mm-hmm.
a lot of denominations. I mean, there were huge conferences, exponential.
ARC.
It was like, you know, 5,000 church planters a year would show up. I mean, it was a mini movement that you mm-hmm. saw. And a lot of the people that were planting churches, you know where they were? They were young guys who had been youth pastors. They were young guys who were coming out of seminary. Or there are young guys who are in a parachurch ministry like Young Life or FCA or something like that. Well, even those pools that church planting drew from, most of them have dried up right now.
Mm.
We're not seeing the same amount of youth pastors going into church planting. We're not seeing, you know, seminaries. Most seminaries right now are drying up. There's only a couple seminaries that are actually growing and thriving.
Yeah, we just saw Gordon Conwell announced yesterday that they were selling their main campus in Massachusetts. I don't even know if you've seen that yet.
You're kidding
me. Yeah, the main campus in Massachusetts of Gordon Conwell Seminary.
Which is a historic seminary in our country. So, I mean, it's fascinating when you think about even the seminary in Bible college I went to. It's very small. I mean, they've had to sell buildings, and it's shrunk down a lot. The pools by which people have drawn out of church leadership or church planting, those things are eroding. So we have to be creative of thinking of new ways. How do we engage the next generation to want to even do this, mm-hmm. right? So you have this drying up of leadership, you have the aging leadership. But I think the other thing that is really important that we have to speak to this is this. There's a death to institutional loyalty. Mm-hmm. That is very prominent amongst the younger generations. They don't follow teams. They follow players. Like for you and me, we choose when we were younger. We chose a team and we stuck with that team, whether they stunk or mm-hmm. whether they were great. That's my team, and I'm going to cheer for them. This younger generation, it's like I like Patrick Mahomes,
mm-hmm.
right? Or I like this player on this team. It has no. The loyalty to the team is non-existent. It's loyalty. I like this player, so therefore I'll wear his jersey. I'll cheer for the team he's on. But if he changes teams, I'm following the player, right? And so what you and I think so differently compared to the other generation, when you think about, hey, come be a part of our local church, they're not thinking, I'm going to join this church to be a part of this church family. What they're going to join is they're going to partner with pastors that they like or partner with. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm just saying that's the reality.
It's totally happening, and it's also happening with non-pastors, because you've got the Lisa Turkhursts and the female bloggers the Beth Moores who have, and it is part of the cult of celebrity that hasn't, you know, I can't help but think as you were talking, you know, so much of the 80s church growth movement revolved around attraction.
Yes.
So we adopted an attractional model, whether we wanted to call it seeker sensitive or seeker driven or all the different terms, but it has become so part of church planting culture and church culture. What we did not realize is that the attractional model feeds consumerism.
Yeah.
And you add to that, as you just mentioned, our tendency to follow gurus and celebrities, and then look at the massive number of the gurus and celebrities who have fallen or who have been revealed to be frauds or who have, you know, abandoned, deconstructed.
Yeah.
And so no wonder we're a mess. We're confused. In light of all that, how do we start a recovery?
Yeah, and I think because we only have a few minutes, I think maybe we take that to the next episode. But I do think that if you don't understand what's wrong, you can't fix it. And I think that what I would encourage older people who might be hearing this, and maybe more mature people, I'm learning how to say mature or mature for Dan.
Yes, thank you.
is don't look at things and. Sometimes we can yearn for the older days. Oh man, when I was a kid, this is the way it was, and this is, you know. Well, guess what? In 2020, this is our reality.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would say to those of you who remember when times were better, I guarantee you this: if you went to 1984 and you talked to, you know what they would say? The same. Well, when I was a kid, this is the way, mm-hmm. and they would, the very trends that were going on in their nation or going on in the church or the country, they would feel like everything's going to hell in a handbasket. And so every older generation feels like this. What I would say to the older generation is don't lose hope and don't lose faith, because even though we see these trends and we see this reality, God is still on the throne and he is still in charge. And there's no guarantee that the trends that are happening are going to continue that way.
Yeah.
God can do anything, you know?
Well, and that's where I would add to that as well, to the younger generation, those of you who are listening to podcasts, because the old guys aren't going to listen to podcasts, right? But step up to the plate.
Exactly.
Work your way to the front of the line.
Yeah.
Take a hold of the leadership. swing for the stands. We need a generation of fresh thinkers and of innovative, creative people. But more than that, we need some people who are deeply in love with the Savior and thoroughly committed to truth and the authenticity of Scripture and the mission of the gospel. To, you know, I've got maybe 10 years left, and then I'll probably be watching from the grandstands of heaven.
Stop it, Dan.
But and that's why I love spending time with the 20-somethings,
yeah.
Because this is the new wave.
Yeah.
But and I think it's important for my generation and your generation as it becomes my generation, is that we've got to be the cheerleaders for this next generation. And we've got to warn them about the stupid things that we bought into.
Yeah. And I think the what I would also say to the younger generation is sometimes they have this perception of, well, this older, they screwed everything up.
Yeah.
And they opt out as opposed to saying, no, come be a part of the movement again.
Mm-hmm.
Like this, we're more interested in just changing the institution. We're interested in seeing a movement of God. And if the church can stay on that message, which is true, I mean, that's the message of Jesus, that man, we're not interested in just growing a brand. That's mm-hmm. the biggest, younger generations, when they hear that, like opting out. Mm-hmm. I want to be as part of something that's bigger than just your thing.
Yeah.
And that's what we've got to remind ourselves at Life Fellowship, is to say, what we're concerned about more than anything else is not increasing Life Fellowship. It's increasing the name of Jesus and the glory of God and the kingdom of Jesus Christ. Yeah. Like that is a thing that we're gonna be going after. And so I think we need to remind the younger generation, don't opt out, because you might see the institutions feel like they're so broken. Yeah.
If you want any reason to quit God, quit church, and to quit being part of what God is doing, Satan will always give you reason.
Yeah.
He will always provide one for you.
Yeah.
But we would issue the call to the next generation and to our generation, is to finish well and to get into the fight, because it is certainly worth fighting. We're going to be talking about that fight a little bit more in our next episode of Life Talks. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.
You've been listening to Life Talks. Be sure to hit the subscribe button so you never miss a new episode. Share this podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to let your friends and family know about Life Talks. We'd love to hear from you as well, so leave a comment and let us know your thoughts on this episode or any other topics we've discussed. Life Talks is a ministry of Life Fellowship in Cornelius, North Carolina. For more information on Life Talks or Life Fellowship, visit lifecharlotte.com, or you can find us on Facebook at Life Fellowship Charlotte.